This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. With another hour of old-time radio crime, this is Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this week. We'll hear from the Black Museum to start us off this time, with their story titled The Straight Razor. After that, it's Pat Novak for Hire and Georgie Lamson, his story from June 12th, 1949.
Here in the grim stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a picture frame, a wicker chair, a telephone directory, all are touched by murder. A straight razor. It's a familiar object, a straight razor. Perhaps your father used one like this. Mine did. Straight, keen-edged bit of steel, beautifully sharpened and stropped to remove a man's whiskers, or perhaps...
A most efficient bit of Sheffield, isn't it, Sergeant?
Yes, Inspector, for its original purpose as well as the other. Matter of fact, I use one exactly like it every morning.
A grim sort, Sergeant. A very grim sort.
Today, that razor can be seen in the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum. In just a moment, you will hear The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. Museum, starring Orson Welles.
And here we are in the Black Museum, Scotland Yard's mausoleum of murder. And here lies death. Row on row of death, marked with names of killer and killed, of murderers caught and of the murdered whose murderers were never found. It's a fascinating room. And here's a steel filing cabinet, prosaic, and yet observe the sharp corner of this drawer. A stain, small bits of hair. A woman fell against that drawer and struck her head. She died. A woman fell, or was she pushed? A book of jokes. Yes, funny stories. Ridiculous that this should be here. Perhaps not. A dying man turned down a page on which was printed an old joke about a wife. Ah, here we are. The razor. It's one of a set of seven. They used to come in wooden cases. You remember the seven straight keen blades marked, one for each day of the week? And this one, well, it was used by a good-looking fellow of about 40 who had a way with the ladies. And no matter where, at home, in the parlor, or even in a hansom cab.
Mabel, you are the sweetest little thing.
Oh, I don't think it's proper you should talk to me like this, Mr. Wilson. After all, you are my employer.
Mabel, darling, my name is Larry. And what if you are my barmaid in my establishment? If you'll only say yes, you shall be my wife.
Mr. Wilson! Oh, Larry... Oh, but you can't mean that. A man like you would...
But apparently he did want the likes of her. To all appearances, Larry Wilson had fallen head over heels in love with Mabel Dill. Now, listen to Larry for a moment.
Mabel, little one, you've got to marry me. I can't see you waiting on the customers, drawing ale, working with me every day. I can't and not have you for my wife.
An interesting accent, hmm? Intriguing. Certainly to a susceptible young woman, that voice and that touch of accent was attractive. And when one has been a sheltered girl in 1896, as Mabel was, well...
Father, there's a letter from Mabel.
Is there now? I should think it about time our daughter wrote to us.
Oh, my goodness.
Something wrong?
Oh, yes and no.
Ridiculous. How can a thing be wrong, yes and no?
Mabel's wanted to be married. And to her employer.
What?
Oh, there it is in the letter. And a note from him, too, telling her how much he loves her.
Hmm. All very well if he means it. How do we know?
Oh, perhaps it would be best if we went to find out.
Excellent, Mother. Write to Mabel at once. Tell her she's to do nothing, absolutely nothing, until she's had the chance to talk with us.
Simple people, the Dills, and eager to protect their daughter's future. So off they went, bag and baggage, to the Statue Tavern. A pub, in fact, owned by Larry Wilson, where Mabel was tending bar.
My word, it's a party, isn't it?
Well, looks like a wedding party to me.
Oh, must be there's a bride somewhere. Oh, there she is. It's Mabel.
Here now, my girl. What's the meaning of this?
Oh, Dad. Oh, I'm so happy your mother got here today.
Oh, Mabel, darling. Oh, didn't you get my letter?
Oh, there was no letter. Oh, come along and meet my Larry. You'll be as happy with him as I will.
Not much the Dills could do about it, was there? Mr. and Mrs. Larry Wilson, proprietors of the Statue Public House, the pub. And happy over it, too, both of them. Of course, things do happen sometimes in the most well-ordered of homes.
There we are, Mrs. Wilson. I'm sure you'll be all right.
Oh, Doctor, I'm so sick. I can't keep anything in my stomach. Oh, Doctor.
She is so ill, Dr. Grant. What is it, do you think?
Probably something she ate. This tonic will fix her up.
The Welsh rabbit, that's what it was. Tasted a bit funny to me. I didn't finish it, remember, Mabel?
Oh, I like rabbit so. Serves me right, I suppose, for being so greedy.
Well, you've learned your lesson, little lady. From now on, more care. Fill the prescription, Wilson, and I'll look in on that again this evening.
Right, Doctor.
Mind now, less indulgence. Strict diet.
An upset stomach, that was all, nothing serious. Except Mabel just didn't seem to get better. Mother Dill came to visit and decided to stay.
I'm staying on, Larry. You've got your pub to tend to. I'll tend to Mabel.
Mother Dill, there's nothing to be alarmed about.
I'm staying, and I'm asking Dr. Marshall to look at Mabel.
Who's he?
My family doctor. Known Mabel for 10 years.
Are you suggesting, Mother, that I'm not providing properly for my wife or giving her the best of care?
I'm not suggesting anything, Larry, except that you have to worry about so many things, and I have nothing to do but take care of my daughter.
I cannot allow it. A man's first duty is to his wife. More, I'm properly qualified. I can take care of her far better than...
Larry, I will not be put off. As for your qualifications, well, really, a barber is no doctor, even though some people permit barbers to bleed them.
Are you trying to insult me and drive me away from my wife?
The truth can be insulting, I suppose. However, from what Mr. Dill and I know, your care of your first two wives didn't work out so well. What with both of them dead and buried these 3 years.
There was no arguing with Mrs. Dill. Her child was suffering and she intended to have her way, and she did. Dr. Marshall came in consultation with Dr. Grant.
It puzzles me. It does, really.
You can see my position, Marshall. I've done everything the symptoms seem to call for. Nothing helps.
Well, we'll see. Meanwhile, if we can get her to take some nourishment, the poor child's just wasting away. I've known her 10 years.
Of course, this was 1896, remember. There are no methods yet, such as a series of gastrointestinal tests or a basic metabolism test or any other of the modern means to determine the cause of intestinal ailments. The doctors had to work by observation and an occasional chemical reaction. In the case of Mabel Dill Wilson, it was tragic indeed.
Oh, Larry.
He's downstairs, darling. Mother's here.
I want Larry. Oh, it's Larry.
I'll call him, dear.
Larry! Will you leave the ball and come upstairs? Larry!
Larry Wilson came upstairs, and quickly, two at a time. He raced up the stairs and entered his wife's room.
Is that you, Larry?
Yes, sweetheart, it is.
I waited for you, Larry. Goodbye, darling.
Mabel, darling.
You took good care of her, Mother Dill. Excellent care, I must say. Your daughter, my wife, is dead.
Oh, no.
The child bride was dead, no doubt about it. The mother's tears were matched only by the husband's angry sorrow. He faced the two doctors.
What did she die of, gentlemen? What?
My diagnosis is exhaustion following inflammation of the intestines.
I do not know, as yet.
You do not know. You do not know. Are you a doctor or aren't you?
I take offense at your tone, Mr. Wilson. For your information, I have refused to approve the death certificate.
What?
Dr. Grant wishes to certify cause of death. I agree that his idea of inflammation of the intestines is probably correct.
Then
but I do not know, as yet, what caused the inflammation. When I do know, I shall be glad to sign the certificate. Whatever caused the inflammation, caused the death.
How do you expect to determine this?
By a post-mortem, Mr. Wilson. I shall do it myself, with Dr. Grant as a witness.
I shall not permit...
But you will permit it, Mr. Wilson, because if you don't, I shall have to report the whole matter to the police and the coroner.
The stage is set. The actors are in their place and the drama has begun, and yet there's something missing. An item of evidence, which was to provide the whole affair with by far its most horrifying aspect. It was a case of razors. Razors, which can be seen today in the Black Museum.
In just a moment, we will continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles. And now we continue with The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles.
The two doctors and the mortician took what remained of poor little Mabel to Dr. Marshall's surgery. There they did what was considered necessary and made their analysis. Shortly after, Dr. Marshall wrote out his report.
And as a result of my analysis, it is my opinion that there is definite suspicion of arsenical poisoning.
With that report and Dr. Grant's concurrence, there is nothing to be done but report the matter to the coroner and to the police.
How certain are you, Dr. Marshall, that there is a large quantity of arsenic in the body?
As certain as I can be, Inspector, without being a specialist in criminal toxicology.
Have you preserved the necessary items, Doctor, contents of the stomach and so on?
I have. In sealed jars, initialed by both Dr. Grant and myself.
Very well. If you will deliver them to me, I will see to it that proper tests are made at once. In the meanwhile, it might be wise to have...
In the meanwhile? Well, of course, there was only one thing to do. A certain pub owner had to be questioned.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes?
My name's Baker, Sergeant Baker. My credentials.
I see. How can I help you, Sergeant?
If you'll come to the station with me, sir, Inspector Waters would like to have a chat with you.
Larry Wilson went along, and quietly. I let him wait a little while before the inspector was ready to see him. Not long, just a little while. Inspector had a job to assign to the sergeant first.
I have a warrant, Baker. Take a squad, go back to the statue and search it from top to bottom. Bring back anything which looks at all suspicious.
Yes, sir. Quick as you can. All right, Mr. Wilson. Inspector Waters will see you now.
Thank you, Sergeant. How do you do, Inspector?
Sit down, Mr. Wilson. Make yourself comfortable.
Two gentlemen facing each other in a quiet office. Might be a business deal. Might be a matter of life and death.
Mr. Wilson, as you may know, we are in the position of having to investigate certain details of your wife's unfortunate and untimely death.
I understand that, Inspector.
Do you have any reason to suspect foul play?
Of course not. Mabel was the sweetest, nicest, most gentle...
And quite poor, wasn't she?
I really couldn't say. I didn't check up on that. I was in love.
Yes, yes, of course. In any case, she had no will and left no estate.
Exactly.
Unlike your first wife, whom you married while you were still a barber, and with whose estate you bought a tavern.
You're very thorough, Inspector. What you tell me is quite true.
Certainly very thorough. Very thorough indeed. The Inspector knows a lot about you, Larry Wilson.
Your second wife, Mr. Wilson, she also left you some money. You moved over to the Statue Tavern after her death, didn't you?
Yes, that's right. Couldn't abide the old place with Belle passed on.
You are sentimental, Mr. Wilson. You left the trade of barber after the other one. What was her name?
Daisy was her name. Yes, I did leave the trade.
May I ask when you came to this country, Mr. Wilson?
In 1888. Why?
Oh, routine check. We found a record of your passport in 1890 for a trip to America. You came back within a year and, of course, it had been noted that you were not born in the British Isles.
That's right.
And then your name is not Wilson, is it?
I wasn't born Wilson. My father's name in the old country was Wilmets. I anglicized it.
An interesting idea, Mr. Wilson. You
said there was more, much more. 2 hours of it. When they were about finished, the inspector had a detailed life history of Mr. Larry Wilson. Of course, there were a few open areas.
1889? Do you know, Inspector, I have practically no memory of that year. I was learning my trade then, I guess. No time for the kind of events which make memories.
And then there was 1891.
I had to reestablish myself after I came back from the States. Took some time. It was in 92 I married Daisy.
And stayed married to her until she died in 94. And then married Belle, who passed along in 95. Now it's 96. And...
Well, we found one thing.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't know you were still here, Mr. Wilson.
That's perfectly all right, Sergeant. I was just about to go.
What have you there, Sergeant?
A case of razors, sir.
What? But those are mine.
Yes, they are. I dare say the Sergeant found them in your bathroom. He's been busy with a search warrant, you see.
Yes, I begin to see a lot of things, including the reasons... behind my being kept here. Is my mother-in-law in on this?
On the contrary, she knows nothing yet. Where did you find those razors, Sergeant?
Hidden, sir. Hidden in the bin on top of a spare bedroom closet, sir.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Very well, Inspector.
While you're on your way, Sergeant, will you escort Mr. Wilson to his room?
Of course.
What's the idea? Are you arresting me?
Not at all, Mr. Wilson. Not yet, at any rate. We're detaining you temporarily on suspicion, sir.
Suspicion of what?
I'll let you know in 24 hours, Mr. Wilson. That's the limit the law allows. After that, of course, I shall have to prepare charges of some sort, but by then, the toxicologist will have reported. Won't he, Sergeant?
The inspector was puzzled. Here was a possible case involving poison, and the suspect had hidden his razors where only an unreasonably thorough search might turn them up. It didn't fit. The inspector filed the fact in the back of his mind. Turned to other things.
The toxicologist report is in, Sergeant. The girl was poisoned, all right, but not with arsenic. Her body was full of antimony. We'd better charge Wilson or he'll be out of our clutches before we know it.
So, they entered a charge against Larry Wilson.
Larry Wilson, you are under arrest on a charge of willful murder. I must warn you, anything you say may...
And then they proceeded to do a little more digging, both figuratively and literally.
I want an exhumation order, Sergeant, for the bodies of the first and second Mrs. Wilsons.
Of course they found it there, too.
The laboratory report, sir. Both the women were poisoned with antimony.
They called in Dr. Grant.
Dr. Grant, you attended all three of Mr. Wilson's wives, did you not?
Yes, I did.
And you made out the death certificates in the first two instances?
I did.
And in both cases, you stated that the cause of death was exhaustion following severe retching brought on by intensive inflammation of the intestines.
I did.
But you didn't consider these facts at all suspicious.
Why should I have? I've seen many such cases.
Fatal cases?
No, not fatal.
However, with the symptoms in all the cases so remarkably alike. They were alike, weren't they?
Definitely. Oh, most definitely. Now that you mention it, Inspector, the whole thing does seem a trifle too coincidental, doesn't it?
Now it was a matter of routine. Three women dead of the same poison. Three women all married to the same man, all treated by the same elderly doctor. There didn't seem to be much more necessary to be done except to trace the poison to the thrice bereaved husbands. The police canvassed all the drugstores, the chemist shops in the neighborhood where Larry Wilson had owned his barbershop and his taverns.
What can I do for you, sir?
Good morning. My name is Baker. My credentials.
I see. CID. How can I help you, Sergeant?
We'd like to know if you've ever had a customer named of Wilson. Larry Wilson, one-time barber and tavern keeper.
Oh, that Wilson. Yes, of course. Used to buy his supplies here.
Did he? What, for instance?
Oh, brushes and combs, soaps as he needed them, and so on.
Did he ever buy any strong antiseptics?
Not that I remember.
Any poison for hair dye or such?
I think he once bought some tartar emetic. Yes, I'm sure of that. I remember now. He told me he was experimenting with a new type of dandruff remover. He had the idea that antimony might work very well.
Dandruff remover. Or wife remover. This was up to a jury to decide. There was small doubt what a jury would decide when the chemist showed Sergeant Baker the poison book.
I'm certain. Yes, here it is. Day and date, amount. July the 5th, 1894. Tartar emetic. Signed, L. Wilson. It's almost 2 years now. I have a pretty fair memory, haven't I, Sergeant?
They had him. Bit by bit, piece by piece, the story was filled in. The saga of this man with a fascinating little accent and the women he'd married.
Daisy Alistair, 5 years older than Wilson, owner of a small dress shop, with £350 saved painstakingly over the years.
Belle Davis, owner of a flower shop, with £275 to her credit in the merchant's bank.
And, of course, little Mabel Dill, who had nothing but sweetness and a share of good looks. Three wives, three deaths, the poison. But still, the inspector was puzzled.
You sent for me, Inspector?
Yes. Sergeant, where do those razors you found fit into this pattern?
The man was a barber, wasn't he? You do mean Wilson, don't you?
Yes, yes, yes. But why did he hide them?
He says he was afraid somebody would cut himself.
Nonsense, there were no children. Sergeant, I may have hit on an angle. I sent over to criminal records for this file. Look at it.
I see, sir. The description of this man fits Wilson perfectly. Of course, this man was seen only once.
True enough, but it's the identical colouring, height, weight, even the brief sound of his voice.
Well, it proves nothing, sir.
I know, but there's more. The cases in this file began in 88. Wilson came to Whitechapel in 88. The cases stopped in 90 when Wilson went to America. But in that year, it's noted here, there were three identical cases in New Jersey. They stopped in 91 when Wilson came back here.
As Dr. Grant would say, it's too remarkable a coincidence, Inspector.
Would you, Sergeant? In this room and having seen this record and knowing about those razors,
hazard that Larry Wilson is Jack the Ripper?
I'd hazard it, sir. I couldn't prove it.
Neither could I, but I'm convinced all the same. Perhaps he... we've got him on other matters. We can hang him only once in any case.
Well, I'd handle that razor with care, sir. It's mighty sharp.
A most efficient bit of Sheffield, isn't it, Sergeant?
Yes, Inspector. For its original purpose, as well as the other. Matter of fact, I use one exactly like it every morning.
A grim thought, Sergeant. A very grim thought.
We shall never know the full story. But most people would agree with the inspector. There was more than a reasonable chance that justice had finally caught up with Jack the Ripper. Certainly, that case of razors deserves its place of honor in the Black Museum.
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment. Orson Welles.
They were sure that they never proved it. Larry Wilson was hanged for the death of poor little Mabel Dill, legally and technically, and for the deaths of his other two wives as well. There's no question. The jury deliberated exactly 10 minutes. But the additional fact remains that never again from the date of Wilson's arrest was there a murder in the technique of Jack the Ripper. Not in London. Not in America. His terrible signature never appeared again on the body of any murdered woman. The case of razors remains in its customary place in Scotland Yard. And now, till we meet next time, till we meet in the same place, and I tell you another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
The Black Museum, starring Orson Welles, is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Radio Attractions. The program is written by Ara Marion, with original music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. Produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Front of my office says, Pat Novak for hire. Oh, sure, you can spell it 50 different ways, but down on the waterfront in San Francisco, it all means the same thing. You pay and I'll do, and the customer's always right if he's got an open wallet. Then I'll match it with an open mind. Unless he's after murder, then the price gets out of range. And down here, you're either high on your toes or flat on your back, because most of the time you get only one kind of pitch, fast and inside, and you don't try if you're foul because nobody cares. Even then, you can't complain. During the summer, the morgue's the coolest spot in town. Oh, I rent boats and wrap up small sins and $20 bills. The money's good when you get it, but there's no retirement plan, and you can't buy vaccination for trouble. I found that out last Wednesday night. I closed up shop about 8 o'clock, and I started walking home. The city was down on its hands and knees trying to crawl through one of those San Francisco hot spells that blast by every 5 years. From up on the hill, the Chinatown tenements lined up down below like sweaty little kids waiting for a shower. It was heat and headaches all the way. But when I opened my front door and stepped inside, who wanted to talk about the weather? She was standing in the dark, smoking a cigarette, and the silhouette her figure cut against the window was something you'd never believe. Then she reached over and turned on a lamp. It was a fast, dizzy trip, but when I got around to her eyes, they were the kind that made you think of hard-working geysers. Deep and warm, and you knew you could count on some fast action when they came to a boil. The smile was familiar, and the lips were red and moist, like a souped-up rose waiting for a bee. She did lots of nice things with her mouth, and talking was one of them.
Patsy, welcome home. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's good to see you, Georgie. What's on your mind?
Patsy, can't you ever take your time?
It's not mine, it's borrowed. Anything special in mind?
Mm-hmm. Easy business. Got a drink?
Mm-hmm. How easy?
Just a boat ride. You can't get hurt.
That's what they told the Spanish Armada.
Getting soft, Patsy?
No, not in the head. Now, look, if it's work, let's talk. Otherwise, let's just be cute, huh?
All right, Patsy. The last time you saw me was a year ago. As far as you know, I'm not in town. Fine?
You tell me. Go on.
Tomorrow night, a freighter's due in here from Shanghai. The SS Calcutta. I want to be on the welcoming committee.
Who says you can't?
Nobody yet. But the ship's going to anchor in the stream, so I need a boat, and I need you.
I'm not the social type. I don't think I'll go.
Believe me, Patsy, it's an easy trip.
So's falling downstairs. Come on, let's deal or drink.
All right, Patsy. My stepmother's going to meet the Calcutta, too.
Who's she?
Mrs. Sheila Lampson.
She likes parties?
She likes a package she's going to get from somebody aboard the Calcutta.
What's in it?
That's her business. I just want to make sure she gets that package ashore, all right.
You in on it?
She doesn't even know I'm in town.
Who picks up the check?
Here. Will $40 cover it?
That's too much for an easy job and not enough for a hard one. Where do I find you if I need bail?
Here's the phone number. You can call me there tomorrow. And Patsy, thanks. I don't forget easy.
Why the rush?
Because you scare me, Patsy. You really scare me. You remember the party, Patsy?
Yeah. But memories are like everything else. They wear out.
Then let's make some new ones, Patsy.
At the door and watched her move down the hall toward the stairs. The white dress she had on was plain enough, but it didn't have a mind of its own. It just did what it was told and tried to behave, but Georgie and nature wouldn't let it. There was only one catch in seeing Georgie. She always left too soon, like a small bottle of fine whiskey. Well, it must have been a good 5 minutes after she left when I heard the buzzer. I was looking for the white dress when I opened the door, but I was looking the wrong way. Side of my head. I went down like mercury in a quick freeze. The trip wasn't nice, but it was long. Halfway there, I came up for breath, and I found the deck of one of my own boats under me. The Bay Bridge lights were still around, and that made it kind of cozy. When my eyes got in focus, the smooth-looking bundle laid out next to me shaped up like Georgie Lampson. She wasn't looking her best. I had just enough time to remember a pair of women's shoes standing next to my face, and then I must have moved, and they punched my ticket for a return trip. The next time I opened my eyes, I was looking up at the lights on Pier 19. Oh, the shoes were still there, but this time they were black, and the feet inside squashed out wide and flat like tired beefsteak. That meant only one thing. Hellman from Homicide.
You can stop playing mouse, Novak. Get up. The party's over.
Yeah, Hellman. I thought they'd never go home.
Your boyfriend here isn't talking.
Is he bashful?
Yeah, Novak. He's real shy. He's dead. Who is he?
That's what you get paid for. What about the girl that was here?
County Hospital. You better pray she makes it, Novak.
Because you like blondes, Hellman?
Because nobody beats two murder raps, Novak.
Oh, you talk funny.
So does this hunk of lead pipe. Your prints are all over it.
What's that make me, a plumber?
Better than that, Novak. The pipe fits a dent in that guy's skull like it grew there.
Well, maybe he's the plumber.
You're smart, Novak. Now, come on, who's the guy and who is the dame?
He's Georgie Lampson, the guy I don't know.
We'll, Novak. We'll take care of that.
Oh, you try hard, don't you, Hellman? You move your lips when you read, you use your fingers when you count, but you never get the right answer.
Don't tempt me, Novak. I'm not my cherry best in the morning.
You don't have a best, Hellman. You tried thinking once, but it gave you a headache. Now when you get in a squeeze, you have to pound your way out with your fist.
I warned you, Novak. Now talk nice and save teeth.
Yeah. I'll talk when that blonde tells her story.
If she makes the grade, how does she figure?
She met me in my apartment last night on business. 5 minutes after she left, the doorbell rang. When I answered it, somebody sapped me. Now, you take it from there.
Yeah, I will. Right to the DA.
Go ahead, Hellman, but don't look hurt when the case blows up in your face.
You're giving odds?
That's all I'm giving, Hellman. You figure it. I took the gal and this girl I don't even know for a ride at 3 a.m. We had a party and I killed a guy. But the gal I only messed up good because I like the way she talked.
You sound scared, Novak.
Well, I'm not, Hellman, but you are because it doesn't add. Why did I beat my skull with that same hunk of pipe? And how did I drive back here to meet you?
Keep your mouth open, smart boy. They got a little green room up at San Quentin. Gets awful stuffy when they close the door.
Well, after I left Hellman, I figured I'd had a bumper crop of trouble for one day. The sun was just beginning to stagger up over the Berkeley Hills when I caught a cab uptown. On the way, I stopped off for coffee and a 6 a.m. Chronicle at one of the little Greek joints off Geary Street. The windows were blind with grease and the light was bad, but the reading was money from home. The story made me stop counting the lumps on my head. Professor Burton Lampson had gotten himself murdered in a Shanghai hotel room a month ago, and they were sending his body back on the SS Calcutta. It was due to anchor in the bay that night, like Georgie said, but the shipping page didn't agree. The Calcutta was listed inside the gate at 7:30 the night before. How did that check out? And what about that package that had everybody worried? Well, when I got back to my apartment, I called the hospital to check on Georgie. Well, they were still giving odds, the long, thin kind. A little later, I was in the middle of a cold shower, adding up rows of zeros and getting different answers every round when the phone rang. It was Hellman, and he was selling nothing but smiles.
You feeling any better, Novak?
Oh, don't tell me you're worried.
We just identified the dead guy. His name's Warren Haynes, local socialite. You know him?
Yeah, I'm an old friend of the family.
The guy's from one of the old families in town, the important kind.
His blood wasn't blue.
No, but we are. We're feeling the pressure already, so I'm calling you in today for a little talk.
That's a great job, Hellman. You keep right on smacking your fat lips because you're going to get more answers than questions.
That's funny, Novak. I didn't think you knew the difference.
When I hung up the phone, I was seeing more red than the bleachers at a bullfight. I probably would have walked right by him if he didn't open his mouth. Even then, it wasn't much more than a loud squeak. He was a skinny guy standing against the door with a half smile, twisting his mouth and a bright, wild look in his eyes.
You seem disturbed, Mr. Novak.
Where's your invitation, mister?
This should prove sufficient, Mr. Novak.
All right, so you want a gun. What happens now?
Now, Mr. Novak, I use the gun unless you hand over the package.
Sorry, mister, you're in the wrong laundry.
Mr. Novak, I've been crossed once today. I don't intend it shall happen twice. The package?
Now, look, you, I'm going to spell it again. I don't know what you're talking about. Now, take that cannon you're pointing and
I think you realize I'm about to use this gun, Mr. Novak, for the last time.
All right, all right. We'll find it right over there. Now here, right next to...
Now, come on, give me that gun before somebody gets hurt!
He stood there for a minute, shaking his head as if he wanted to go back and wipe 5 minutes from his life. All of a sudden, he jerked around on his tracks and he stumbled for the door like a timid drunk when you tell him he's had enough. Then he folded up hard against the wall on his knees. But it was a little too late for prayers. I stood there for a minute trying to think of a good lawyer who owed me money, but all I could see was a courtroom and a picture of Hellman smiling as he listened to the verdict. Well, accident or not, if Hellman dropped in with a body on the floor, he'd bury me so deep in San Quentin he'd be bringing me air in paper bags. When the knot in my stomach untied, I dragged the little guy away from the door and I rolled him on his back. His eyes were still asking for the package, but the rest of them didn't care. Outside of a few bucks, his wallet was empty, not even a laundry tag. Well, I got dressed, and I pulled the blinds and locked the place up. And then I went out to look for the only honest guy I know, an ex-doctor by the name of Jocko Madigan. He was a fine surgeon until something made him decide life was temporary at best. Now he's got a permanent post on a bar stool looking for answers at the bottom of whiskey bottles. Well, it's hard on the liver that way, but you're never short on dreams. I finally found him with a bourbon halo in a musty little Italian joint over in North Beach. It was a long stretch from Easter Monday, but he was still celebrating Irish independence. He looked like he was on the wrong side because his nose was a bright orange.
Patsy, my boy, you're just in time. These simple but honest Sicilians have agreed to embark with me on a crusade. And as honorary past president of the Sons of St. Patrick, the Powell Street chapter, I invite you to join us.
Come on, Jocko, sober up. I gotta talk to you.
Oh, to fittingly observe the occasion of old Era's joyful victory, we're first fortifying ourselves with grappa and bushmills. Then we sally forth to chase all the snakes out of Long Beach and the cockroaches out of Chinatown. How does that strike you, Patsy? And why aren't you smiling? Tis a glorious day.
Because I'm in a jam and I want to talk, Jocko. Now cut it.
Oh, Patsy, you remind me of that Devil Era fellow. You're sitting on the curb and pouting just because they won't let you march in front of the band in the victory parade. You're sour, Patsy. Admit it.
Jocko, will you snap out of it? I'm in big trouble.
You're always in trouble, Patsy. You're a child of adversity, a son of scorn. The fates spit in your eye and you try to retaliate, but the wind's always blowing in the wrong direction. You're a lost leaf in the mortal storm, Patsy. You're a pebble shaking a tiny fist at the mountain. You would like to fight for some strange, fantastic cause, wouldn't you, Patsy? But you can't find anybody your size. Men are too small and the gods are too big. Patsy, you're lost.
Are you all through?
Yeah. What kind of trouble?
Oh, it's a pair of bum murder raps, Jocko. Somebody sapped me in my apartment last night and I woke up this morning with a dead guy.
That sounds interesting. What was it you were drinking?
Hellman's out to pin this on me.
Oh, a dubious honor. You mentioned two murders.
A guy came in my apartment this morning waving a gun and asking for a package that I never heard of. We started wrestling for the gun.
Mildly exciting. Who got it?
He did, right in the chest.
Patsy, you have absolutely no excuse for losing your temper. Why, you're not even Irish. Still, you're always getting hot-headed at the wrong time.
It was an accident, Jocko. I didn't even know the guy. I'm sorry, but I can't cry.
Sure, that's what the British general said after he hung Robert Emmett at the dock. But he didn't straighten out the Marcel in his neck. What are you doing out of jail?
Will you knock it off, Jocko? Now, look, did you ever hear of a Mrs. Sheila Lampson?
Certainly, and I'm very offended with her. In the past year, she set up drinks for every eligible and non-eligible in San Francisco except me.
That sounds good. What else?
Not much, but I often wonder what that poor old professor she married does with his evenings.
He stopped worrying, Jocko. He's dead. Now, look, will you hop down to the Chronicle Morgue and check with Steve Nagel? Have him dig out all the old clips on the professor and Mrs. Lampson, will you? And while you're there, check on a guy by the name of Warren Haynes. You got that?
Yes, but what do I do for money?
Half a buck for car fare and nothing for booze.
Patsy, surely you're jesting.
Jocko, will you quit clowning and get going?
If you say so, Patsy, but you've broken up a beautiful party. My Sicilian friends have gone to sleep and I'm thirsty again. Let's have 4 or 5 for the road, shall we?
Later, Jocko.
Oh, all right, Patsy, but only for you. By the way, where can I find you?
I'm going to tag by the county hospital, and then I'm going to look up Sheila Lampson.
If I remember the story correctly, Patsy, you'd better reverse your schedule. Good night, lover.
When I left Jocko, I tagged by Mama Lupo's on Kearney Street, and I called the hospital again. Oh, Georgie was a little better. At least the undertakers had stopped bidding. Mama Lupo clouded up for a storm when I asked to borrow her new car for a couple of hours, but a few pats and a pinch, and she was all giggles and car keys. 10 minutes later, I was fighting traffic on Potrero Avenue. The south wind out there brought the slaughterhouses right into your front seat. I found the hospital out on the far edge, and it was a nice-looking pile of dirty red brick. The nurse in the ward didn't believe I was Georgie's brother until I asked her if she was busy Saturday night. Then she saw the resemblance right away. I found Georgie behind a couple of screens at the end of the ward. For a dying woman, she looked pretty good. She smiled a little when she saw me, like she was saving up for a bigger try later on.
Patsy, I'm glad you made it.
Look, I'm going to keep it short, baby. Who was it last night?
Sorry, Patsy. Big deal.
You can't tell or you won't.
Can't, Patsy. Later I will.
And that package, same deal?
Same.
Well, I got a deal too, Georgie, a murder rap. They want to hang it on me.
Who was it?
Warren Haynes. Do you know him?
I remember. Good corpse.
Now, look, you're slicing it awful thin for $40, Georgie.
Patsy, trust me.
No choice, baby. You're driving. Don't go through any red lights.
I won't, Patsy.
Telephone, Mr. Novak. I said it was urgent.
That's it, Georgie. I'll see you later.
good time, Novak?
You know any phone numbers besides mine, Hellman?
Not today, Brad boy. You near a streetcar or do I send a chauffeur?
What's your beef?
Our beef, Novak. We'd like it fine if you paid us a visit real soon.
Sorry, Hellman. Book solid.
Command performance, Novak. I wouldn't disappoint.
What's the matter, Hellman? You want it in blood? I told you I don't know anything about last night. I never saw Haynes before.
You got me wrong, Novak. This one's about a knife. We just found it in your office down on the waterfront.
That's fine. Peel yourself an apple and keep busy.
You better come down, Novak. We found the knife in some guy's back.
Houdini couldn't get out of that one in 2 hours with both hands and a can of olive oil. It was like chasing cyanide with a bucket of brandy. Well, it tastes bright, but it's only a matter of time. Well, I headed for Sheila Lampson's place, and on the way, I pulled up by a drugstore out in the Haight Street jungles and called the Chronicle Morgue. They said Jocko had just left, so I called the nearest bar and asked if they had a customer with a bright orange nose. They did.
Jocko Madigan speaking.
Jocko, this is Novak. What'd you find out?
Ah, Patsy. Just enjoying a small refresher after some very excellent reading.
For instance?
Sheila Howard Lampson. She started seeing the professor back in 46. There was a scandal, the nasty kind, and the professor's first wife, Barbara, jumped off the bridge, the Bay Bridge.
Yeah, go on.
A month after she married the professor, Sheila was mentioned in every gossip column in town. So the professor took off on a scientific trip to China. A month ago, he was murdered in a Shanghai hotel and a hatful of emeralds was stolen. The authorities figured that the murder was premature.
What do you mean?
Well, the professor had had three major operations, and at the time of the murder, he had less than a week to go.
What about Haynes?
Haynes is one of those black sheep that wealthy families have cut off without a penny. He's one of Sheila Lampson's escorts, and he's now on his way back from the Orient on the SS Calcutta. Anything else?
Jocko, I could kiss you.
Patsy, you stick to your line, and I'll stick to mine.
Well, the puzzle was still a sack full of holes and question marks, but at least Jocko's leads had a little juice in them. I found the Lampson house in the best part of the Seacliff district. It was one of those big, nervous joints hanging by its shutters to the side of a steep drop that slid down sharp into the Pacific. All green trim and stucco the color of mortgages. The front doorbell was wearing out in my hand when the maid showed up, and then she was tongue-tied. She didn't know a thing except good money when it was offered. And then she told me I'd find Mrs. Lampson in the second floor sitting room. She went away. I found the sitting room all right, but Mrs. Lampson wasn't there. So I followed on through till I came to a bedroom with a bright red ceiling and a lived-in feeling. Reminded you of something Henry VIII might order for a bridal suite. She was sitting next to the couch holding a martini and making noises like a leopard on a honeymoon.
Hello. Well, call me baby.
Yeah. You always wear handkerchiefs to parties?
Mm-hmm. Saves time. Dressing. You're nice. Have a drink?
I'll fix them.
Oh, you are nice. What's your name?
Novak. What's yours?
Beauty.
Is that a name or a game?
You're just like Mike. He's my new boyfriend.
This is night off?
Oh, no. We just went downstairs for a minute. Hey, you fix a nice drink, Mr. Novak. Warm.
Yeah, you got a fever or something?
No. Must be the weather, Mr. Novak. You feel it?
You're a big spender, aren't you? What do I do when Mike walks in? Smile?
Oh, Mike's broad-minded.
How about Sheila?
You fix a good drink, Mr. Novak. You ask a lot of questions, too.
Yeah, well, that's because I like answers. Now, what about Sheila?
Hey, you're going to get rough. I'll call Mike.
All right, all right.
I'm Sheila's sister, and it's much better when you're nice to me.
All right, then let's start being nice, huh?
Mr. Novak, what was that for?
I'm a big spender, too. Here, have another drink.
I think maybe I'll have another you, Mr. Novak. Got Mike coming upstairs?
Could be, baby. Now, come on, where's Sheila?
Oh, Sheila. Who cares? She's downtown anyway. She won't know. Hey, where are you going?
Sorry, baby, I got a date.
I'm not busy. Well, I do.
Don't let him leave, Mike.
He does. He's going to walk through me.
I'm sorry, baby. He's not my type. Mike was a tall, wide package, so I gave him a bargain offer. He didn't fold after two, but he had a kind of hurt look in his eye when I hit him the third time, like I didn't know he could take a hint. When he wound up and hit the floor, every window in the house rattled, and I figured the Berkeley seismograph got a cheap thrill. I made it as far as the front door when I heard a car pull up in the driveway. When I got to the window, a dame and a guy were getting out of a new Nash and heading for the door. The guy was a middle-class gunsel, but if the gal was Sheila Lampson, she made nice opposition. Well, I couldn't wait around to see. I finally managed to make my apartment without having one of Hellman's men pick me up, and when I got in, Jocko was just pouring himself another glass of green dreams and posing in the mirror like a man of distinction. The stiff was still there on the floor next to a glass of ice water.
Patsy, I don't approve of your choice of party guests.
The guy's dead, Jocko.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll overlook it. This is the friend you were telling me about? When are you due at the gas chamber, Patsy?
Any phone calls?
Oh, now that you mention it, yes.
Hellman?
Regularly on the quarter hour. Not very coherent, but I got the idea he's looking for you. Also a call from the hospital. They wanted to know the whereabouts of a Miss Georgie Lampson.
What do you mean?
It seems she disappeared a few hours ago from one of their wards.
Oh.
Patsy, you look worried. Perhaps a sampling of this delicate dollar ambrosia would help. Try it.
No, thanks.
Suit yourself, Patsy. Myself, I'm an old subscriber to the Socrates plan of self-destruction. If you want it done right, do it yourself. By the way, have you noticed our friend's hands lately?
Huh?
It looks like he's entertaining a scrap of paper in his right hand.
Yeah, I see it. Oh, let me see here.
He seems kind of stingy with it, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I got it.
Uh-huh. Oh, an old envelope. Not even a coded letter to puzzle over.
I'll settle for the address, Jocko. Take a look.
Captain Edward Small, SS Calcutta, Paramount Line, Shanghai. Well, that's nice. Shall we have another drink?
Later, Jocko. Right now, we haven't got the time.
If that's who I think it is, Patsy, you're going to have lots of time. I'll just whip up a short one.
Novak talking.
Listen, smart boy, and listen hard. This is for the last time. You check in here in 10 minutes, or I'll send out an all points. Dead or alive, Novak.
All right, Hellman. There's a dead guy here in my apartment right now. His name's Captain Edward Small, off the Calcutta.
I don't need any more bodies, Novak. I can hang you twice with what I got.
All right, Copper. But if you want your picture in the paper tomorrow, you can meet me out in C-Clip in 15 minutes. 48 Camino Drive. When I hung up the phone, most of the puzzle straightened out like wet wash in a dry wind. Now, there's one thing you can count on. When you bet on miracles, you buy a ticket straight through. I finally pulled up at the Lampson place, and I started looking around for Hellman. The joint looked about as crowded as a Kremlin breakfast for Senator Taft. I was taking a fast check, trying to figure how far they could have gone, when Hellman fought his way through the box hedge for the driveway. We circled down behind the garage and around in back of the house. We'd just made it in time for the curtain scene. Sheila Lampson was backing down slow toward the seawall, waving her arms in the air and begging every inch of the way. And Georgie stumbled after her like the avenging angel, and she had a gun. She had a coat tossed over her hospital gown, and the look in her eyes told the whole story. Tears and hate and lots of both.
Novak! Novak, you've got to stop her! She's crazy! She's crazy! She wanted to kill me!
What's so crazy about that?
You're sweet, Patsy, but you weren't invited. Don't get too close to the animals.
It's your gun, Georgie. Don't let it hang you. This is Hellman from Homicide.
No good, Patsy. This one's for me. Isn't it, Sheila?
Georgie!
Isn't it for me?
Please, Georgie, don't! Novak, stop her. Stop her before it's too late.
All right, girls, let's break it up.
Be good, Copper. You too, Patsy.
It's your neck. It won't look good stretched.
Please, Georgie.
Don't eat that, Sheila. Not yet. First, I want to tell you how clever you are. How sweet you looked at my mother's funeral. How you ruined my father. How discreet with other men, Sheila. Terror was magnificent.
Georgie. Georgie, please. I didn't know, Georgie. I didn't know it. I swear I'll make it up to you. Please.
One
please.
Other thing, Sheila. Listen to me, Sheila. Those emeralds you've got, the ones you sent Haynes to Shanghai for, the ones he killed my father for, they were glass, Sheila. 10-cent green glass, you hear, Sheila? Glass!
Please! Georgie, please!
Georgie, watch her. Sheila's got a gun.
Betsy. Betsy.
Take it easy, baby. You got a long trip.
She's dead. Isn't she, Betsy? She's dead.
She didn't die, baby. With that much lead, she sank.
It burns, Patsy.
burnt.
It'll cool. The fog's starting to come in.
Remember the party, Patsy?
Yeah, I remember.
Then say it, Patsy. Please say it now. Say it.
Yeah, Georgie, I'd say it, but you're not listening. A letter in Georgie's coat pocket that told most of the story, and then Hellman grabbed Mike and Sheila's sister and sweated the rest out of them. Well, it wasn't a pretty story, but it moved. When Sheila spent the professor broke and he checked out over in China, Georgie decided to blow the whistle on her. She made up that phony yarn about the emeralds, and then she let Haynes murder her father and walk off with them. They were glass. To make it look good, Haynes played pallbearer and took the boat back with the body. But not before Georgie tipped the captain and the first mate about that sack of emeralds Haynes was supposed to have. So they went to work. They robbed Haynes and planted a fake for a fake. It was a real cat and mouse game. Georgie only made one mistake, but sometimes that's all it takes. She flew back here a few days before the Calcutta got in so that she could be around for the payoff. One of Sheila's pals must have spotted her and trailed her to my place. And then the sapping started. That was the same night the Calcutta got in and people started checking packages and pulling triggers. When Sheila found her package was a fake, she figured Haynes was being cute, so he got it first. And then she went out after that original fake. She tried to double up and hang Haynes' body on me and get rid of Georgie at the same time. But Georgie didn't die easy. I don't know how the captain got on to me, probably through Sheila. But her Drensel friends took care of the first mate with a knife when he got anxious. Well, when the dust lifted and they counted cold noses, it was a real devil's game. Wherever he was, Georgie's old man must have been holding his sides and rolling in the aisles. Yeah, a real plum. And Sheila found out when you get close enough to the seed, the taste gets bitter. Well, Hellman asked only one question. How come a smart girl like Georgie bought something as stupid as revenge? I don't know. She was a lot better at a lot of other things.
Included Lois Andrews, Steve Brody, Herbert Litton, Jerry Hausner, Ivan Ditmars, Ray Erlenborn, and Hal Sawyer. This is a Larry Finley transcription, brought to you from Hollywood.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. Tune in now and then if you want to hear more from the Black Museum, more from Pat Novak, Case Closed, or anything else Relic Radio, visit the website at relicradio.com. Find all the shows listed right on the front page with a donate button there as well if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. Your donations make this all possible. Thanks to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.